is Minnesota's Notorious Crimes. My name is Jay, and this is my mother.
I'm Tony. I go by my Instagram name. You can reach me at Excel4Tony. Yeah, and this is my wonderful daughter, Jay.
Mm-hmm. This is a mother-daughter podcast about Minnesota's most notorious crimes, either solved or unsolved.
Because we love mysteries. We watch mysteries on cable and generic channels all the time.
Very true. Our first case is solved, while our second case is unsolved, and it takes place in St. Cloud.
Get started then.
Okay.
With the very first one.
So our first case, the victim's names is Haley Kelfer and Nicholas Brandy. Haley is 18 and Nicholas is 17. They were cousins. Brady had been working for his father's tree trimming business and made very good money. According to his sister, he didn't have to resort to burglary. Brady had stolen drugs from his sister on August 28th, and that was still in an investigation when he was murdered. Kelfer, which is Haley, had been in treatment many times for abuse of controlled substances. Her cousin speculated that she may have been after pills, although she had returned to school and had been trying to straighten up her life.
Now, the perpetrator is Byron David Smith. He was 64 years old, and he never married. He had traveled the world as a federal employee and most recently worked a desk job, managing about 50 people at the time. Smith has been robbed at least 8 times within the year, according to his brother. The most recent one, before the murders happened, someone has stolen $10,000 worth of guns, electronic gear, and cash. And not all the robberies that has happened to him was reported, but the most recent one was reported to the Morrison County Sheriff's Office. The neighbors described Byron Smith as a loner who liked to shoot his guns often, intimidating and worrying his neighbors.
Yeah. Now, the day of the incident is November 22nd, 2012. Kelfer and Brady broke into Smith's house through the rear of the house. They broke the glass in a bedroom window using a lead pipe, then crawled in, walked down the hallway, and went downstairs. Smith was in his basement workshop. Smith shot Brady twice at the bottom of the basement stairs and once in the face fairly after he fell to the bottom of the stairs.
So what you're saying then is that Smith shot Brady twice at the top of the basement stairs, and then fatally, once he fell all the way down the stairs, at the bottom of the stairs, he shot him fatally.
Yeah, that's how the newspaper reported it.
Okay.
Minutes later, when Kelfer entered the basement, he shot her at the top of the stairs. Wounded but still alive, she fell down the stairs, and after Smith's rifle jammed, he shot her multiple times in the chest with a .22 caliber revolver, dragged her across the floor to set her beside the body of her cousin, and then shot her fatally under the chin. Before the finishing shot, he could be heard saying, "You're dying," and called her a bee twice. He then whispered, "I'm safe now." All this was caught on audio and video by Smith's security camera.
I can imagine. She must have been terrified.
Right?
The many times as he shot her and then dragged her body next to her cousin. I can imagine.
He was truly deranged.
The crime was not reported until the next day because Smith didn't want to bother the police on Thanksgiving. He asked his neighbor to call the cops. Morrison County Sheriff acknowledged that Brady and Kiefer,
that's how I think it's said.
Okay. Kiefer were there to rob Smith and that Brady's car was linked to other robberies, specifically to a retired teacher the night before he died, or a night before the incident.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Smith's statement, police statement, Smith said that Kiefer let out a short laugh after she fell down the stairs, saying, "If you're trying to shoot somebody and they laugh at you, you go again." However, the audio did not record Kiefer laughing. Instead, she cries, "Oh my God." In police interviews, Smith took credit for firing more shots than I needed to, and that he fired a good, clean, finishing shot into Kiefer's head. He stated to the police that he finished Kiefer off with a shot to the chin because a .22 caliber doesn't go through bone very well. So basically, he was angry that he was being robbed because previously someone had robbed him and took like $10,000 worth of stuff from him. Mm-hmm. So he was angry and he wanted to kill somebody because of it. Mm-hmm. Instead of just shooting the person to disable them, mm-hmm. and then go call the cops, he execution style, mm-hmm. basically killed them. But what person leave two young people, mm-hmm. in their basement overnight, mm-hmm. wait till the very next day to call the police?
Mm-hmm. And also, mm-hmm. I found no evidence that they're the ones who had robbed him previously as well. So he was taking out his anger on the wrong people.
But you know, even if they were, you don't kill nobody like that. And then they were young people. Mm-hmm. Like they said, they may have been on drugs. Mm-hmm. Previously, so they needed something for drugs. Even though you don't want anyone in your house robbing you, and you are afraid if you're by yourself. Mm-hmm. But he had the gun, he had everything he needed, and the only thing he had to do after shooting one time, mm-hmm. was call the police.
Exactly, yeah.
Shoot him in the basement, maybe go up, lock the door, call the police. Mm-hmm. You don't do young people like that.
You really don't.
Don't do people like that, especially young people like that. Mm-hmm. That's sad.
Exactly. And it's like you said, lawyers have stated that after the initial shooting, was very justified, but they said all the shots after that were not justified because the threat was removed. And also, unfortunately, his actions were also premeditated, according to the police, because he moved his truck earlier in the day, mm-hmm. and then he claimed it was to clean his garage, although they argued at trial that it was an attempt to make the house look abandoned in order to lure burglars into his home.
Mm-mm. Then another weird part to this story is that he recorded 6 hours of audio on a digital recorder in the basement of his house while sitting in a chair at the bottom of the stairs, tucked between two bookcases, with a loaded rifle and a tape recorder that captured not only the shootings, but also Smith talking. Prior to the break-in, he was heard saying, "In your left eye." And I realize I don't have an appointment, but I would like to see one of the lawyers here. He also stated he didn't see them as humans, but as vermin. The prosecution noted that Kiefer was later shot in the left eye by Smith and alleged that the other statement, it was a rehearsal of what he would say after the shooting, evidence that he knew he would soon need an attorney.
Mm-hmm. And then following the shooting, Smith was stated saying, "I am not a bleeding heart liberal. I felt that I was cleaning up mess, not like spilt food, not like vomit, not even like diarrhea, the worst mess possible, and I was stuck with it. In some tiny little respect, I was just doing my civil duty. If the law enforcement system couldn't handle it, I had to do it. The law enforcement couldn't handle her, and it fell into my lap, and she dropped a problem into my lap. And I threw her own problem in my face. Oh, and she threw her own problem in my face, and I had to clean it up," end quote.
Wow. So that was Smith's recorded statements. Mm-hmm. So that was all evidence, mm-hmm. that he had planned the shootings, along with the excessive number of shots fired led to a second degree murder, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And then Smith was initially charged with 2 counts of second degree murder. However, in April 2013, he was indicted on 2 counts of first degree murder. So at first, it was excessive force. So at first they were going to charge him with second degree murder. Mm-hmm. But once they got all the evidence to show that it was premeditated and it was excessive, mm-hmm. they changed it later to 2 counts of first degree murder. Mm-hmm. And his bond was set at $50,000 and he was able to post that.
Yep.
Wow.
And then on April 29th, 2014, Brian David Smith was found guilty on 2 counts of first-degree murder with premeditation and on 2 counts of second-degree murder after 3 hours of jury deliberation. He was immediately sentenced to life in prison without parole. The audio recordings were named by the jurors as the biggest effect on their decision. "That is the most damning piece of evidence in my mind," Wass Hollerstadt, hope I'm saying that right, one of 12 jurors said following the trial. The audio recording of the actual murders and the audio recording of Mr. Smith's interview immediately after his arrest pretty much convinced me that we were dealing with a deranged individual.
That's so sad. And he did all that because he was upset that he was being robbed, mm-hmm. and he said that he was afraid. Mm-hmm. But my thing is, when people go and kill other people because of material things, mm-hmm. he's sent away for life in prison. That means he lost all his things.
Exactly.
His home, he can't live in his home, his material things. Was it really worth it?
Exactly. And more likely he'll die in jail as well.
That's sad. Mm-hmm. I give my deepest condolences to Haley and Nicholas' family. Mm-hmm. That was very sad.
Very sad.
Now, the second one mm-hmm. is not solved.
Nope.
And I never heard this one before. So yeah. This is all new to me.
This one is very new to me, too, and I didn't know anything about it before I researched it.
So go ahead and tell me about it, and don't be surprised if you hear a lot of noise in the background because of me being upset and stuff. So let's listen.
So the victims are Mary Recker, and she's 15, and Susan Recker, she's 12. They lived in St. Cloud with their parents, Fred and Rita. Now, the case starts on September 2nd, 1974. The Recker sisters had a busy weekend. They had a large family reunion, and school was going to start for them soon. So the sisters left to go to the local store, which is a discount store for back-to-school shopping. But Mary also wanted a winter coat. The sisters left at 11:15, according to the mother, and the store is about a mile away. So it mm-hmm. seemed safe to her to let them
I
just
think
walk
I heard the
there.
Story before, but go ahead, because you know I do a lot of reading and I watch a lot of mysteries, yeah. but I think I may have heard it before.
It is a very well-known case,
is
actually.
It? Okay,
yeah.
Well, go ahead, though.
So Mary was wearing a wired-rimmed glasses, blue jeans, brown Oxford shoes, a short-sleeved white sweater, and an army fatigue shirt with Recker stitched above the left pocket. Susan was wearing navy blue
cord. Just slow down just a little bit so that we can get all the details.
Okay. Navy blue, gold wire rimmed glasses, a white cotton jacket, and a low cut boot. The manager at the SoCo store on their route saw the girls before noon. At 1 p.m., Jacob Younger, hope I'm saying that right, their neighbor, chatted briefly with the sisters. In a 1977 interview with the Minneapolis Star, Younger said he heard Susan tell Mary, "I don't want to go with that man. I don't like him. Let's not." I'm not sure who they are referring to, though. Younger also said the girls walked towards the store's grocery section, which was closed for Labor Day. The women's coat section was in the same area. A worker in the grocery section was convicted 2 years later for stabbing a St. Cloud girl. I couldn't find any more information about that, so I'm not sure what the context is for that, unfortunately.
How old was he? He's just
I didn't. Okay. I tried to research who he was. I couldn't find anything.
Okay.
Yoger told the police he saw a nervous-looking large man waiting outside the store around the time the girls left. Another witness told police that he saw the sisters at a tavern on the other side of St. Cloud with two men and about a dozen teenagers. He remembers the Recker on Mary's shirt. A few people live by the abandoned Muradon Aggregates Curry, southwest of St. Cloud, said the girls, matching the Recker's description, headed to the popular swimming area that afternoon. When the girls didn't return by 7 p.m., the parents immediately went to the police. Unfortunately, 25 days later, the girls were found. Two teenage boys found their bodies in a curry. Susan had been stabbed 13 times. Her fully clothed body was found under a bush about 13 yards from the curry. Her glasses and jacket were a few feet away. Mary had been stabbed 6 times.
Oh, my goodness.
Her body was found on a ledge under 40 feet of water. Her pants and underwear were found on the cliff, but it looked like someone had tried to throw them in the water. Her bra had been cut into 4 pieces. The front of her sweater was never found.
Oh, my goodness.
The most unsettling part of the mystery, though, is the diary entry of Mary. This is a direct quote. "If I am murdered, find my killer, so that justice wins over. I have a few reasons to fear for my life. And what I ask is important," end quote. Her mother said this about the diary entry. It's troubling why she wrote that, why she had that thought.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the aftermath is the chief deputy, Bruce Bechtold, considers the case a top priority in Steens County. Stearns County is also the same county that saw the murder of Jacob Wellington, a very popular murder in Minnesota.
Same county.
Mm-hmm, same county.
So they don't think it's the same person who killed Jacob, killed the two?
No, I found no connection to that, because the people they think did it, which I'll talk about this later, okay, are a teenage boy.
I haven't heard this story before.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the summer of 2016, a new investigator took over the case. Police have maintained that a young man in the area is likely behind it, and he may have had accomplices. VicCog Society, a nonprofit organization in Philadelphia, whose members are experts in various fields of criminal investigation, looked over the case and, start quote, supported and confirmed that the persons of interest identified by local investigators were in fact the trail to follow, end quote. Marty Recker, who was the brother of Mary and Susan, and was 10 when they had disappeared, mm-hmm, says, the VicCog Society pointed out who did it. And so in my mind, that's the guy that did it. Sorry to know who did it. And I feel it's just a question of, can they prove it?
Wow.
End quote. No names have been disclosed. Sanner, who was Stearns County Sheriff, says scientific advances, especially in the area of DNA, mm-hmm, could provide a valuable link to the persons of interest. Mm-hmm. He said, in addition, we actively monitor any changes in the individual, such as news of a terminal illness, a death in the family, domestic unrest, to name a few. This is done with an eye on looking for the right opportunity to obtain any statements or comments that would indicate guilt or possible involvement, end quote.
Wow.
And that's very popular with police officers. They monitor people for deathbed confessions and all that.
So, wow. Wow. Go ahead.
And the police also say that the people they're looking for are still alive. Now, that was in 2016, by the way, when they said this. Rita, their mother, has said, I'm convinced there are people around him that would know, and it's time to tell, end quote. Rita and Fred went on to raise 4 kids. Unfortunately, Fred died on December 31st, 2012. And the case is still open, and there's a $50,000 reward for it as well.
Mm. So the people that they suspect did it, these teenage boys, mm-hmm, they just suspect, but there's no evidence yet.
No.
And they have to wait to get DNA from them.
Exactly, yes.
So they don't have a criminal history, these teenage boys.
I'm assuming not, if their DNA is in the system. So they must be an upstanding citizen, you know, in the grand
scheme. Oh my goodness. That's so scary, because you get these people who seem to be upstanding people who do these type of crimes, mm-hmm, and then there's no evidence. Mm-hmm. That's scary.
And the sad part is, if they are now married with kids and the wife has no idea, neither does the kids.
So just wanted to see what it felt like to kill somebody or to do something, and then they did it and move on, if that's the case.
If that's the case, yes.
Oh, that's a powerful one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's still out there. It has not been solved yet, and there's a $50,000 reward for solving it?
Yep, or for any clues as well. So
that's kind of scary, though. In the same small county,
mm-hmm,
these horrific crimes have happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
Yep, and we will be doing the Jacob Wellington case sometime in the future as well, since it's very popular in Minnesota.
Sounds good. Yeah. Well, this is our first podcast.
Yeah, and it will improve over time.
It will improve over time, yes. So always remember us, Tony and Jay, Minnesota Notorious Crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for listening.
Have a good day.